recording?
The one you're making as we speak.
Hold on, honey. Got you guys are listening to everything.
The bugs are there for your protection.
I know.
You either have no ability to use this for any purpose whatsoever, either for free or for money. You want to test me in the courts? If we did not buy ownership, we bought exclusivity. And if you want to try and check me out, and you go ahead and try and do something with it, and I'm going to sue your ass. You can never use it without our permission.
Maybe he's right.
So I sent you the check. I own it or I control it. You can never use it for anything without my permission. And if you want to challenge me, we'll go to court tomorrow and I'll prove you wrong. And you want to find out? Let's go.
Maybe he's wrong.
I'm telling you the facts of law and the facts of reality here. The reality is I gave you money, I own it, or I control it. If you want to try and do something with it, I'm going to sue you. You never use it for any purpose again, or I will sue you.
Maybe he's right.
I own the copyright.
Get a fucking lawyer. Go get a lawyer right now.
My name is Scooter, and this is the Inner Side Radio Program. Last week on the Inner Side Radio Program, our intrepid band of Negative Land had achieved self-inflicted media infamy. It all began when they canceled their 15-city tour for lack of money. A rather embarrassing and boring reason, so they put out a press release through their independent record label explaining that federal law enforcement officials asked them to cancel the tour after a teenage boy in Minnesota, or one of those states out there, had hacked up his entire family with an axe. The band simply embellished that news story by adding that the boy had done so after being influenced by one of their songs, Christianity is Stupid. Hence the interdiction by law enforcement that they ceased touring until the end of the trial. This story was picked up by the local music magazine, then got to radio, finally a feature piece on the San Francisco CBS television affiliate, the second page of the San Francisco Chronicle, and finally went national on NPR. We'll pick up the story of the hoax where we left off last week. We'll be listening to Mark Hostler, founding member of Negative Land, speaking at the University of Houston, March 14th, 2008.
Hoping for a speedy conclusion to the Brom case in Minnesota, and eventually a return to their live performances and a career that after 9 years had finally taken some positive turns. But a quick end to the bizarre murder case may be in doubt. A Minnesota judge has ruled that David Brom will face trial as a juvenile. The prosecutor wants Brom tried as an adult, and he's appealing. I'm Hal Eisner, Channel 5 Eyewitness News.
It'll be several months before the court decides whether to try David Brom as a juvenile or an adult. The date for his murder trial can't be set until that decision is made. That means it's also not clear how long the band will be restricted from performing.
In this particular case, when this thing was broadcast, it was broadcast all over Northern California, and a lot of people were watching, including my mom and dad. And I got this hysterical phone call, you know, from my mom, you know, saying, Mark, you know, they can't do this to you and your friends. They can't accuse you of this. It can't be true. No, Mom, it's not true. We made it up. Of course they made it up. I mean, how come the whole, this is insane. No, Mom, we made it up. And it took me quite a while to walk her through the whole thing, you know, and say, no, it's completely fabricated. There's no connection between our group and these murders whatsoever. The media is completely irresponsible. The media is relying on other news media as the source, you know, for their stories. You know, they're not checking their facts. They're not doing their job. But of course, to my mom, you know, if you see it on television, how could it not be true? You know, and something I've often said in my talks is that, you know, I don't know if Negative Land's work has any effect on anybody, but I do know that my mom has said to this day, she's never watched the news ever the same, ever again, you know. So we changed my mom. But for us, this is, you know, I really do hope we'd make good work, but it's the journey we've gone on with our stuff has been, more than anything I can say for me personally, just this incredible education. I mean, it's one thing to, I mean, you all know that you can't trust what's in the media. You all know that how they spin things. You know, you intellectually understand this, and I do too. But it is a very different thing to actually go through it for real and see it actually happen. It's kind of frightening, it's disturbing, it's horrifying, it's kind of exhilarating. A lot of different things all at once. And certainly anytime you hear any news story that says apparently or they say, I mean, there's all these words that just immediately should be red flags, like warning, warning, you know, you're being spun to death. And if Negative Land can get a story like this into the news, I mean, what does this say about everything else we're reading, you know, coming out of Iraq? You know, can I believe anything in the news? Well, I don't know that you can, unfortunately. Well, so it was on TV. Well, the San Francisco Chronicle, the daily newspaper of the San Francisco Bay Area, saw it on TV. Well, of course it's true. It was on the damn TV. So they called us up. They wanted a quote. Richard got the phone and said, "We're not talking to you. We just got a rock thrown through our window. We're under attack." And that was completely made up. And that made it on page 3 of the front page section of the paper. You know, local band under house arrest, and there was this whole story. And then they were even quoting from a news story from Rochester, Minnesota, of the sheriff from the county where it happened, out of context, as if he was talking about our record. And we had hired a clipping service so we could get all the news reports on the real murder and the case and what was happening. Because I should let you know that as this thing blew up, I mean, we had no idea it would get this big. And in the end, we ended up on NPR, and that's when we finally told the truth. We said, "Well, we're on National Public Radio. Let's explain to all our fans. Oh, tell all of our fans we've been lying to you for 6 months." You know, and I love that idea. You know, let's say Negative Land is one of your favorite groups, and you find out, you know, they've been lying to us. You know, but as the story, you know, as I said, it really was an experiment. We didn't know what would happen. But as the thing got bigger and bigger, I mean, clearly, we're interested in it for reasons I think you can tell about how the media operates. But we also were gratuitously and horribly exploiting a true tragedy, right? These murders really happened. So we became increasingly kind of conflicted of feeling about this, you know, as we had group meetings about what we're doing and what's next and all that. So we decided the responsible thing to do was to make an art project out of it and explain our lies, name names, and in honor of Hal's promise to not sensationalize our story, we decided to call this project Helter Stupid. And so we ended up making a CD about all that. So Helter Stupid came out and certainly added a strange, if you want to call it, feather in our cap, I don't know, an axe in our cap, a strange new image to our group, because I think if we'd been known about anything before this, we were sort of thought of as being these geeky, nerdy, pointy-headed, suburban, you know, white guys making these funny tape loop music. And now look, you know, this very strange, dark image attached to us. I can't imagine anything we would ever do that could ever get any more attention than this, or you know, how could that happen? Well, I was wrong about that. We finally did go on tour. We were playing a show in Portland, Oregon, and a fan came up to us and handed us a cassette tape. This is back in the days of cassette tapes. And he said, "You guys have to hear this. You're going to love it." And we took it back to the motel where we were staying and put it on. And it was recordings of a top 40 DJ by the name of Casey Kasem. Now, how many of you know who this is? Okay, most everyone does, because I'm realizing this story is old enough now that it could become a generational thing. Like, he's maybe like the, maybe now the equivalent is Ryan Seacrest. I don't know. No? I don't know. Help me out here, younger generation. He is? All right. Great. Whew, okay. So it was Casey Kasem, I guess, having an incredibly bad day in the recording studio. And, you know, he's a voice talent, so he's the voice of Shaggy and Scooby-Doo. That's Casey Kasem. He's also been arrested for civil disobedience, protesting in nuclear testing, and he's an animal rights guy. He was one of the few celebrities in Hollywood in the early 90s to speak out against the first invasion of Iraq. I mean, he's a you know, lefty guy. But he was being a complete ass to his recording engineer, and I think the engineer's revenge was to get these tapes out. And basically, when you're doing voice work, you'll do the same takes over and over again, you know, to give your editor a bunch of choices. And he was trying to do a top 40 countdown for a band that he got the name of the band right and the country they were from wrong, a group some of you have probably heard of by the name of U2. And so we got a hold of these tapes. Now, of course, nowadays, if this stuff came out, it would be an MP3 file, and it'd be all over the place, and everyone would hear it, ha, 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 very funny. And we would not have been inspired to make this, to do the project we did at all, because part of what was exciting was that nobody had this. It was kind of just a very underground thing to get a hold of these recordings. This tape was so damn funny. We had to do something with it. You know, there's a critical aspect of Negative Land's work, absolutely, but there really is also a real, almost kind of guileless, joyous celebration of all this crazy crap culture we have here in America that we find and we want to share with everybody. And so Casey Kasem, we felt, this had to be shared with the world. And so we thought, let's have him actually introducing a U2 song. And then I found some software you could use on computers to kind of play your own home arrangements of popular songs to sing on top of. And we started thinking about using the image of a U2 spy plane in some way, because that's where U2 stole their name from. And I still haven't found what I'm looking for, like the spy plane looking for things, you know, going places it's not supposed to go, getting shot down, prophetically enough. We had tape recordings of a bunch of CB radio trucker recordings of two truckers who were trying to track down a third guy who's taunting them. And these tapes, we'd had these tapes for maybe a decade, and they're just so funny and amazing, and I'd always wanted to use them, but we never had found anything that worked for, you know, and they seemed to fit into this piece that was always about finding things. We thought about having David Wills of Negative Land, also known as the Weatherman. If we handed him Bono's lyrics to the song, we just thought he would probably do some incredible massacre on Bono's lyrics that would probably be pretty good too, which he did. So it kind of evolved into these two different versions of the song, I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, by U2. You know, one of them using the altered versions of U2's lyrics, and the other one using really focusing on the Casey Kasem tapes. We put all the most foul language on the side of the record that we called Special Edit Radio Mix. We were working on designing the cover, you know, and we were thinking, trying to think about what to call it. And at some point, we were thinking to call it U-2. Now, the band U2 is U without the dash. We thought, well, the U2 plane is with a dash. But then at some point, the idea evolved into using the airplane as the dash. And maybe just, why don't we actually make the whole thing look like a new record by U2 that's called Negative Land instead of the other way around? Now, you have to admit this is a really good idea, right? Maybe you think this is a stupid idea. We thought it was a great idea. I think that we thought that if anything was going to happen to us, it would be a slap on the wrist or a phone call or something, you know, because we're no threat to anybody. We don't. Most of our records, you know, don't even sell 10,000 copies. All these ideas combined together to make what for us was like this epic project, you know, and we love the idea of something that really appears to be something it is not. That people could pick this up in a record store and be confused by it. Kind of in their moment of trying to consume cultural goods, they are confused. And we like that idea, you know, that something is misleading you. And in fact, maybe they realize what it is and realize that this can't exist. They cannot have done this, but they did. And I just, there was something very inspiring about that. So the U2 single came out. Well, unbeknownst to us, this is a bit of the story that I've only recently found out. The day it came out, REM's manager walked into a record store in Athens, Georgia, and saw it. REM's manager is personal friends with U2 and their manager, Paul McGinnis. And REM's manager picked it up, looked at it, and was on the phone that night with Paul McGinnis and said, did you just put something out called Negative Land, or what is this? And U2's manager said, what? Send this to me right away. And it was overnighted to Ireland, and thus, 10 days after its release, Negative Land received a 200-page lawsuit from Island Records, which was U2's label at the time, and Polygram Music, their publisher, suing Negative Land for trademark infringement, for using the letter U and the numeral 2, for copyright infringement, for using chunks of U2's music in our version of their music, failure to obtain a license to do a cover version of a song. When you can cover songs without permission, but if you alter the lyrics, you have to get permission. They sued us for defamation of character for associating such foul language with the clean-cut image of U2. And they sued us for fraud, saying it was a get-rich-quick scheme intended to dupe millions of innocent U2 fans into buying this thing. I guess the average U2 fan's really stupid, so. U2 fans are stupid. And By the way, we didn't do this because we hate U2 either. I mean, a lot of people assume that about us, but it's not true. I actually like plenty of their music just fine. But, I mean, they were a cultural phenomenon. They were the largest rock band on the planet at the time we did this project. You know, absolutely, hands down, they were it. Well, here we were being sued for all these things, and really, for the first time, you know, the man had brought the hammer down, you know, and we were being sued for basically the way we'd been working for, at that point, 11 years. We were interested in fighting it, but because we had no assets to go after, the lawsuit was against both Negative Land and SST Records. I mean, they had 30 employees. They had the, you know, millions of dollars coming in from all the sales of all their punk rock records. So it seemed fair to us that we had to let them kind of call the shots. And in the end, it became very, very ugly because in the end, we not only got sued for putting out the record, but we then put out a magazine that documented the lawsuit, and we got sued for putting out the magazine that was about being sued for putting out the record. But that's more that I can get into in this lecture. So Negative Land was sued for, as I said, not only a particular work, but we were being sued for an entire way of operating. And I want to talk a little bit more about that. But before I do, in case you're wondering, I'm going to show you a video that we made to go with the B-side of the single, the one with the bad words on it. And this is the one piece of actual bona fide, honest-to-God, illegal art I will be showing you. I am not allowed to show this to you. I have a court order that says I cannot, that I can't talk about it, perform it, play it. So, I know you won't tell anybody.
Now, we're up to our long-distance dedication. And this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in Cincinnati, Ohio, and here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's come start again. From coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please. That's the letter U and the numeral 2. The four-man band features Adam Clayton on bass, Larry Mullen on drums, Dave Evans, nicknamed The Edge, on... This is... Nobody cares. These guys are from England, and who gives a...
Oh, yeah.
Just a lot of wasted names that don't mean diddly...
Obviously, I can't play this on the radio without hacking it to pieces. There wouldn't be much left of it. But it's now a video on YouTube. If you'd like to check it out, just search Negative Land and look for the letter U and number 2. There's no E in Negative Land.
So much to be said coming out of that project. You know, we were being attacked for one particular work, but what it really caused us to do is we had to really look at everything we'd been doing and everything we were about, because Negative Land does not sit around having conversations about our work like the way I'm talking to you now. We work very intuitively together. We always have. And so it really forced us to have to kind of evaluate everything about what our work was about, because we were facing losing we were going to lose it all, you know, all the income from all of our releases, everything. And it was, you know, what do we want to fight for here? What's right? What's wrong? And we really felt like, look, you know, no one has asked me whether I want to be bombarded by advertisements and media and pop culture and billboards everywhere I go. It's just like we're swimming in it. This, you know, all this privately owned corporate culture that's being blasted at us everywhere we go. And I'm being told I'm supposed to just be a passive consumer of it and not do anything with it. And we think that's kind of absurd. You know, it's like if you're making art, you make art about the world around you, right? Well, I don't live on an island, you know, in a mud hut. Most of us don't. And so this is the world we're in. This is what we're going to react to. And it happens I'm using, you know, instead of a paintbrush to paint a painting of, you know, a flower in a field, you know, the flower in the field is now a McDonald's on a hill, and I'm taking a digital image and altering it in some way. I mean, it's the stuff that's in your environment, and the tools you have to respond creatively have just changed dramatically. But the impulse, the creative impulse, is just the same one we've always had, which is just to make art in response to the world we're in. It's just, by gosh, there's these things called corporations, and they now have been recognized by law as being persons, except they're immortal. They never die. Not like any person I know. And gosh, if a corporation ends up doing something that kills someone, you can't put a corporation to death because there isn't actually it's not actually a person. Even though they get all the, basically corporations get all the benefits of personhood in this country and none of the responsibilities. It's a very insidious thing. It's why we have this no democracy in this country because corporate money, because they're given free speech rights, you know, as if they're a person. So therefore, a single person like, you know, General Motors or Enron, you know, can donate money to some candidate, and they're somehow equal to you or me giving them money. Well, that's just ridiculous. Of course they're not. And so the influence that they've had, you know, where we all know, I mean, there is our our representatives in Congress and the Senate, and, you know, don't represent us. They represent the interests of people who give them money. And it's a really, really tragic, terrible thing. So at the time we were sued, no one was speaking out about this stuff at all. And we felt kind of like the canary in the coal mine, and a bit like we'd been handed our mission from God. You know, maybe Christianity isn't stupid after all. And that really, you know, we had been now sued on behalf of the world's largest rock band, so it was our responsibility in a way, you know, or we had this incredible opportunity. We'd just seen with this axe murder hoax we'd gone through how, you know, the media can become a mouthpiece for you if they're shining their lights on you. They're going to let you speak at least a little bit. And maybe we can talk about this in a way that speaks to the larger, you know, the larger picture. And as time has evolved, you know, what we've really seen is that the privatization of things is not, you know, we're dealing with it at a cultural level, right? But you've got the privatization of, say, water. You know, how many of you know about this in Africa, you know, where, you know, it's going to be cheaper to buy a liter of Coke than it's going to be to buy water when you're living somewhere and have $0 living off the land and someone says they own that little river that's near you now. You know, Monsanto is privatizing, you know, seed ownership in India so that you've been growing seeds passed down for 3,000 years through your family, and now Monsanto says, well, we own a patent on that and a trademark on that, and if you use them, we will sue you. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up. This is really happening, right? We kind of felt like there was something much larger going on here that was really, we had to say something about it and speak out. And now, all these years later, you know, now you have things like Creative Commons, a kind of an alternative to existing copyright law. Negative Land actually helped write their sampling license for them. We worked with them. And we have people like Lawrence Lessig, and we have books being published and classes being taught. And I mean, I'm being asked to speak at universities and law schools. And suddenly our point of view has morphed into something that seems to be not so crazy sounding anymore. You know, this is a real discussion, a real debate. And this is why I ended up being asked to be on this DC based lobbying group of all, you know, who would have thunk that, you know, we'd be involved with this? It's pretty wild. And I'm still suspicious of them. But it turns out that the people, the lobbying group, the Consumer Electronics Association, who represents Apple, Microsoft, Sony, Panasonic, you know, it turns out that the people who make all the hardware that use the ones and the zeros want open systems, and the people who produce the content, the movie industry and the film industry, want closed systems, right? Each one's fighting. It's basically Disney versus Apple, you know. I mean, they're fighting with each other in a way, and it turns out that a lot of the hardware makers are actually agreeing with a lot of our points of view, albeit for very different reasons. They just want to sell more of their gewgaws, where we care about it at a more of a cultural level. But this is why I got asked to speak at the Consumer Electronics Show, which was, you know, definitely a trip. And I found out that the head of this president and vice president of the Consumer Electronics Association, which is the largest like trade lobbying group in the U.S., they were fans of our work. You know, a guy who like meets with higher-ups in Washington and has lunch with Bill Gates, and he was saying, I have your U2 single on vinyl. I'm so excited to meet you. Very, very strange that we've evolved to this point. A lot of crazy things happened after the lawsuit, including an overzealous fan of ours actually got a hold of Casey Kasem's home phone number and made some kind of threatening messages on his answering machine. So Casey called the FBI, and Negative Land got really investigated by the FBI. We managed to trick the Edge, U2's guitarist, into an interview. He didn't know who we actually were, and midway through we actually revealed, you know, we were in Negative Land. And so all that's, we published this book that's about the whole thing that's called Fair Use, The Story of the Letter U and the Numeral 2. So it goes into, you know, it's good bathroom reading. The chapters are all very short. So, well, in that book, there was an audio collage about audio collage, and on there we decided what better place to really go over the top and sample from people like Disney, who were just notoriously litigious. And so we ended up making this piece that utilized a song some of you may know from Walt Disney's film, The Little Mermaid. If you know it, you can join me. Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think? My collection's complete. We agree with REL. We think all this stuff out there is so neat, and we would like to have it and do things with it. And we took that song, and then we had a recording of a friend of a friend of a friend of ours was threatened over the telephone by some higher up at a record label over copyright issues, and we ended up with this great, amazing phone call which this is not one I could really claim fair use over or anything. It's just totally illegal wiretap stuff. But it's great, right? And we used all this, and it... And, of course, we had been now sued not only by U2's label, but the owner of SST was also the founder of the band Barclay. And he had sued us, too.
We're not talking about whether it's convenient. I'm talking about overbreath in this law.
Hello, Dead Dog Records.
You guys are listening to everything.
The bugs are there for your protection.
I know.
You either have no ability to use this for any purpose whatsoever, either for free or for money. You want to test me in the courts? If we did not buy ownership, we bought exclusivity. And if you want to try and check me out, and you go ahead and try and do something with it, and I'm going to sue your ass. You can never use it without our permission.
Maybe he's right.
So I sent you the check. I own it or I control it. You can never use it for anything without my permission. And if you want to challenge me, we'll go to court tomorrow and I'll prove you wrong. And you want to find out? Let's go.
Maybe he's wrong.
I'm telling you the facts of law and the facts of reality here. The reality is I gave you money, I own it or I control it. If you want to try and do something with it, I'm going to sue you. You never use it for any purpose again or I will sue you.
Maybe he's right.
I own the copyright.
Get a fucking lawyer. Go get a lawyer right now. Let's have it out. I am not going to piss around with you about this. You can't use it without my permission for anything forever. Got it? Get a lawyer, because you're going to need one.
Maybe he's right. Maybe there is something the matter with me.
I'm going to sue your ass.
I just don't see how a world that makes such wonderful things could be bad. Look at this stuff.
I own it.
Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete?
You wanna find out?
Wouldn't you think I'm the girl?
Let's go.
The girl who has,
let's go,
everything.
You can never use it without our permission.
Look at this trove.
I own it.
Treasures untold. How many wonders can one cavern hold?
I'm telling you.
Looking around here, you think.
I own it.
Sure.
I control it.
She's got everything. I've got gadgets and gizmos aplenty.
And you want to challenge me?
I've got who's its and what's its galore. You want thingamabobs? I got 20. But who cares? No big deal. I want more.
This has been the Innerside Radio Program, Negative Land Special Part 2. Mark Hussler, recorded at the Cynthia Woods Mitchell Center for the Arts, University of Houston, March 13th. Thanks to Chuck for the engineering help and the Aurora Picture Show. If you're interested in seeing Negative Land in Houston next month, I'll have that information on the website soon. And you can find that website by Googling The Innerside. See y'all next week.